Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Australian democracy. This is the way that we govern ourselves. Now, before I get going, I'm not one of these people who believes that their country is better than others, and things are really, really great, and so much so that we should go overseas and tell other people what to do. But there is a little bit of interest in the way that Australians participate, and for all our participation, how dreadful we are in terms of leadership and efficiency and getting things done. However, it is an incredible thing that we have something like 98% of people voting, and of those 98% who vote, 98% vote effectively. Yeah, this is a pretty incredible thing. We have over 94% of people cast an effective vote. No, it's not necessarily there. Now, you can hear me here, I'm walking at night, and there's obviously a dog barking at me. And what's happening here is that I've got to do so much exercise a day to get on top of things. So I'll just have to... It's an Australian dog voting with its bark. Now, that being said, there's a series of things to, I suppose, make things fair and representative as possible. It's not a perfect system, but it's allegedly the best, the highest, most democratic system. And there's been a series of things where Australia's sort of bumbled through. Some chances that there's been sort of a general contract between the people and the government. The government does good things. But it's not necessarily, there's lots of flaws and stuff like that. And before I get talking about flaws, I'll talk about some of the good stuff. So, there was a series of, I suppose democratic reforms which led to the American British democracy and, American democracy. And now the point is that they had, voting in England previously, and they didn't have a secret ballot. So what would happen is that people would turn up to a thing, and everyone would hear how everyone voted, and there was an ability to interfere with the people who were voting. So they'd turn up, and the candidates would be there, and would people would that candidate would be able to speak to the person before they voted. And the voting was restricted to landed classes. So it was democracy that people voted. However, the casting of the vote was in a way that it reflected less consideration. So perhaps if you don't have a secret ballot, so in Australia, you vote, and no one can see how you vote. Now, I'm sure that's in the United States that you vote, and no one can actually physically see how you vote. But Australia had that very early on in the piece, and so essentially, people saw the American model, and in sort of response, there was very much the idea of the government providing structure and land. It was very much a franchise of the government first in Australia, rather than sort of powerful people morphing into government. It was actually the government came out first. And there's sort of a series of things happening. So there was electoral reform in Britain to move things away from the House of Lords and landed people, and really the first thing that happened was sorry there was various things had come out from Britain, and they said if you owned a certain area of land, you could vote. Now, of course, Australia being having much lower fertility soil and much more land, it automatically meant that Australia got catapulted ahead to the head of the world in terms of the franchise. So franchise refers to who can vote. So early on, there was the Lords, then it expanded to, I suppose, all men, and then it expanded to men and women, and in America, you had blacks, you know, whether the blacks could vote. And all these sorts of things. But, the Australian franchise went across, and, Australia was having the first to give women the vote, of all the countries, in the world. And, these are facts, coming across. And, early on, for some reason, we just had it as a law that everyone must vote in the country. And so there's two responsibilities you can't get out of. As a citizen, you have two responsibilities. One is to do jury duty. So if you are asked by the community to sit on a jury, you have to do jury duty. It's just automatic. Or you get sent to jail. How about that? You have to, you can't refuse to do duty as an Australian. And you have to, vote. And, you get fined if you don't turn up and officially front up to a polling station, and vote. Your name is recorded and you get fined. And so, you have a large, thing. So, compared to any, yeah, so just in terms of, we may not have the most efficiency, we may not have the, greatest, lack of corruption. I think there's Norwegian, or sorry, Scandinavian countries are fairly high up on that. But we are definitely ahead of it. And, the, institution, the voting day is a very collegiate day, and at every single polling station around Australia there's a barbecue, and it's known as a democracy sausage. Everyone has a hot dog on the barbecue day, and that's just sort of associated with governments. Now, it's not necessary. Now, there's a electoral commission, and the boundaries are set by sort of a third party system. So in America, the boundaries are set bipartisan committees, so you get to these very unusual boundaries to get people elected to certain parties. Where that's not the case, where there's a mathematical formula, and so this is for the representative government, basically representative. Now, unlike America or anything, a lot of people get swept up on it. You actually never vote for a person. You can only vote for your local representative, or choose two votes. One is in a local geographic region. So in our case, it's the Blue Mountains and Hawkesbury, a bit of Hawkesbury, come together. There's sufficient, I think, there's something like 100,000 people. Or probably there's 50,000 people, 100,000 people, and they vote, and we have not a first past the line, but we have a what is it, a preferential system. So you vote for A, if not A, for B, if not B, for C, etc. Now, so if the person with the so if your candidate isn't getting in, so essentially if you have 10 candidates and you're first and second, and say if it's a race between first, second and third, then all people who vote for fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth, their election preferences are put through until you get they're converted to of your votes, of those three who are getting in, which three of those three would you have selected, and it counts as a vote to that person. It's a preferential system. Now, then, to simplify it for, say, the House of Senate, the Senate's voting sheet is a metre and a half long, and there's several hundred people, so you have to either manually vote for the first, below the line, the first 15 out of over 150, or above the line, those people are grouped in party groups in the Senate, and what it means is that a party will get so many senators in the upper house, and what had happened is, to simplify it, you could give your preferences to a party and vote one. You used to be able to vote one, and you'd vote one, and then if you voted one, your one and your senator wasn't going to get in, your one would then automatically ghost count preferences up to so many more. So if I have such a party, I'm not getting in, but the vote for me is now automatically preferenced according to party lines. They've just got rid of that, and you have to give your first six preferences for the Senate vote. And so because of what had happened is that people had been able to work out a complicated system of going between candidates, and that if people didn't get one, the next preference would be something else, and there was a complicated system where you could actually on the very fringe of the last couple of people get someone in from an extraordinarily rare party. So there was people in there from the four-wheel drive party and various things like that. That's been eliminated, and it's gone back to it. So we have a system of 3-year terms, which is really 1 year settling, 1 year doing something, 1 year campaigning. And so it's just an endless cycle, there. And the issue is, I suppose essentially people are being asked to make decisions, and the actual decisions are, so the electoral people have made decisions, and they're not being properly informed. In fact, they've been informed in misleading, fake news sort of way, and this plagues all democracies. But what happens, there's great angst before the election. This is my observation. So we've got a system which is in terms of comparative to other countries, very healthy. However, there's no need for complacency. So essentially, people make a vote based on information, their incomplete ability to understand things. So there's a couple of things. One is the information is incorrect, and the information is massaged to meet people's ability to understand, which is a sort of fundamental thing that's hard decisions to make, and technical decisions to make, and it requires a length of time. Typically, basically an issue needs to go through rather than 6 weeks, lightning, 6 weeks is the actual campaign thing. So what happens is, it goes along, and once the election is called, you can't pass any laws anymore, and the government goes into caretaker mode. And so you've got this thing, it goes across. Now the issues take a long time to actually get up, so you have your initial reaction, and then there's a technical reaction, and there's, and all this process doesn't come across, and you get this sort of snowstorm of issues to look at. So here things are changing a little bit in terms of specialist groups then give an analysis of things, and it's actually coming out in podcasts. So just for one instance, this particular government. So, if you have a share, in a company, and the company makes a profit. So of that profit, which is additional income, they get taxed on it. So I think it's around 30%, US it's about 20%, and which is lower than the income rate. Then it was seen that if you had that money, goes to the people who have invested in shares, that's seen as income, and it's taxed, well, it used to be taxed twice. So in effect, that if you were to invest in something in Australia, that dollar coming to you, a certain fraction, a greater fraction, wound up with the government. And people looking at a microscope, you could say that we could give you more money if the government didn't tax you. It's just that your tax has been taken out already. So that's called a franking credit. And people, if you don't look at what's going on, if you don't see the argument in several sections together, you don't see that although you have very rich inequality of these very rich people who have sufficient money to make the money gain wealth, they appear to be getting income without paying taxation, and that appears unfair, and indeed it does appear unfair. However, it does require analysis. So the whole process of doing things, and the entire process of understanding that people have information fatigue. So it's sort of like, say, if you have a doctor treating a patient, and they work around for, and it comes lunchtime, let's all wrap it up and let's go ahead. It's Friday afternoon, let's finish off, let's wrap it all up, and get all these issues, it's fairly complicated, gets wrapped up. Now, in the real life, you don't do it, but in the election system that we do have, it comes across. And so, there's this technical stuff that the technical we've got a very complicated system, and the intelligence and policy information doesn't, we shrink our public service all the time. So the ability for these issues to come out as recommendations are very, very hard to actually put up. So I suppose it's for the actual political parties to work out what they're doing. So I'm just going a bushwalk. It's absolutely quiet now. There's a natural lagoon in Glenbrook, so I'm going around that. There was a whole series of things, and Australia is exploring whether we give 16-year-olds the vote, and the sort of feeling that your vote is legitimate is sort of put in for, is part of their fundamental social cohesion. So there's definitely no sign of civil unrest or civil war. Now, this is also because Australia is a very wealthy country with huge amounts of mineral resources and agricultural resources. So if you look at continental United States and you subtract California from it, that's the size of Australia. But then if you then add a fairly good fishing zones around it, and central access to Asia, so we are closer to China and India in the United States, but so our entire economy, I think our population, I shudder to think we went above 20 million. I think we're heading 25. We're going to head to 30 million soon, as the world population is going gangbusters, we've got huge numbers of people coming into the country. So, like, all advanced educated countries, our population, natural population growth has stalled to zero. So in Germany, Italy, it's a little bit negative. Australia's just on par. So Iran or countries which are under stress, sub-Saharan Africa, it's much higher. There's 6 or 7 children per person. But overall, we're reaching peak child across the world for it. So Australia has these issues of trying to actually look at it. And it's not that I think people aren't so concerned about ensuring that there is truth. It's more that people have the candor of truthfulness. That is, that if they find that there is a problem with the argument, the way that the policy, it's sort of like you employ a plumber to dig a trench, and they're digging a certain mile, and they see that digging the trench in a particular way is unsafe and less optimal, you sort of expect them to to be professional and tell it to you as it is. So it's sort of like the government and the politicians are providing a service, and in providing service, they have to have the candor of truthfulness, and that general concept hasn't really pushed through. So in certain fields, like medical fields, that is, say you've got there's heaps of situations where the high politics is being sucked out of the situation. So in the 50s, a lot of aircraft crashes was caused due to politics. The people underneath, the lower rank people, weren't empowered to speak up. They just went with the flow. The planes crashed, so they changed it to be a more equitable thing. A nurse in an operating theatre, if they see a surgeon make a mistake, it's good to actually point it out. And even if the surgeon is doing the correct thing, there's not this anger happening there. Again, in the areas of let's have a look at what's going on here. Koala Lane Working Bee. Oh, the stories. I'm going into this bushland at the moment with a lake off the side. So I'm just trying to think. Oh, in intellectual property, judges in the US said that the various companies were making it difficult for the patent examiners to find the actual truth, and they were not showing something called due candor. And this is this professional sort of maturity of that your company, and that you've discovered that what you have done has been invented before. And if you have shown that you have taken steps to obfuscate and make that difficult, you haven't shown due candor in it. In that, it's no longer the buyer beware. It is actually the duty of the people involved. So, and that's called due candor. And so the sort of the entire concept of falsifying records or modifying things, also in accounting, also in the stock exchange, if you do something wrong or some events happen, you have to notify the stock exchange. You can't hide things, because that hiding is defrauding. Now, what's this? These things are evolving over time and getting established. It just hasn't established itself. Well, it is establishing itself in a little bit in the political arena, but then again, it's not. It's the idea of people have this sort of concept of profit by ownership of knowledge, by ownership of know-how. So you know what piece of land is going to be developed. You're pretty savvy. You go in there and buy land up first, and then it goes up. So that's sort of insider trading, insider knowledge, as opposed to someone who knows how to save someone's life through surgery, and they get rewarded in the market mechanism. There's two separate things. However, the people who use lack of candor as a value system are the very ones who say, "Oh, I am valuable because I have a big car and a big house, therefore I must be right." And those people you unfortunately can't reason with. So I do think that Australia's gone through has part of the system correct in terms of the actual mechanism. It's not universal suffrage. It is universal. It's not suffrage. Universal enforced doing. So you do get everyone voting. However, I think we've still got this method to go ahead, where there's this professionalism that the best effort, open effort that comes up. The issue I have is that in a climate of there's something, things called a landscape of fear, that if people have a psychology that they're not being treated fairly, they're not going to be cooperative, they're going to react in a certain way. But if there's this understanding that everything is fair, everything is open, you can go there. And that definitely hasn't happened. So you're very much aware that you are told things, but you're only told, in certain circumstances, half the story. And people do, if they believe that, often only half listen. Okay, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll try and get on to the next podcast. Population.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.